Dynasty Radio, 1382.
Understand you by and by. Take nothing less than the suffering best. Do not obey, no mistake or say, but you can pass the test. Just move on up to a greater day. With just a little of faith, if you put your mind to it, you can surely do it.
Good afternoon, family. This is Paula Massey with the Education of the Miseducated System. You're listening to Dynasty Radio 1382, the revolutionary radio for revolutionary people. This is a live call-in talk show, and if you'd like to speak to the host, which is me, you can call in at 646-716-7572. Press the number one, and we'll put you in queue. Thank you for listening today, and thank you for listening last week. Last week, we talked about the homeschool, like we always do, and we talked about the unschooling. We talked about the different unschooling, different types of private school, different types of homeschooling people do. And I talked to you a little bit about what I perceived unschooling was. I never really did it or didn't know about it, but I know that it's very important that when you have a child that you're trying to homeschool, that you figure out what it is that that child loves to do. You find out their passion and you build their curriculum around their passion. Schooling mainly is just basically allowing the children to learn at their own pace, and you introduce things to them and they introduce stuff to you that they're interested in. And you build a curriculum around that. So today I want to be talking about some other things, and I know that we're getting close to the end of the school year. And I hope you parents out there have made the decision to meet with your child's teacher if they're still in public school or even if they're in a private school and get those cumulative folders, take a look at them, see what's going on, and make your decision on what you're going to do for the next school year. Okay. If you decide to keep your child in a public school, I do have some things that I do want to talk to you about today. So we're going to be talking about those. And like I say, you can call in, ask a question, make a statement, have a comment, a disagreement, whatever it is that you feel like you want to do, you can call in and do that. Okay? Let me see where I'm at right now today. Let me go back to my page here. Okay, here I am. Okay, today we're going to be talking about, you know, I go online and I posted it to the Facebook page, Education of the Miseducated System. The site that I go on a lot and it's called The Black Homeschooler, The Black Homeschool. So that's a site that you can go on, and I really am appreciative of these people who put this together because they put a lot of things in there that positive, let us know what's going on positive, what's going on negative in the school, whether it's homeschool, whether it's public school, whether it's private school. Some of the things that we could teach our children. It talks about a host of things. So it's called the Black Homeschool. And so you can go on, sign in. They'll send you a link to your email. And they talk about the educational news, raising black children, some of the resources that you would need if you want to homeschool your children. They have spotlights and special things that are going on in the homeschool community. Successes, some of the successes that we're having during the school year and some successes that happened after school. Okay, and they also have a page where you can contact them. In the educational news, what we're going to be talking about today is why black boys end up in special ed when they don't belong there. Now, some of you probably know some children, or even those who are my age, older, younger, knew some kids that you were going to school with, and because of their behavior, because they were just nonchalant, or they just sat in the classes, was staring off into space, or wasn't engaging in the classroom, wasn't, they weren't bad. I mean, they weren't disruptive or anything. They just wasn't engaging. And let's say you know their child is put in a special ed class, or you know somebody's child who was like that and put in a special ed class. And today I want to talk to you about some of the reasons why our children are placed in these classes. And I tell you a lot, it has a lot, some of it has a lot to do with the first day our child sets foot in that school. Okay. The teachers start labeling, and they write in that cumulative folder or the behavior folder, whatever folder they're writing in, about that child, and it is passed on to the next teacher. When that teacher gets ready to come to the school the next school year, she already has all those cumulative folders, behavioral folders. She's already looked at it, and she knows the students that she's going to have, and she knows her plan of action. She knows who to spend more time with and who not to spend time with at all. And the ones who she chooses not to spend time with at all, or minimal time with, I'll put it that way, are those students who are struggling. Only because that teacher has point A and she has to get to point Z in those 9 months. She has to birth the child into the next grade level in those 9 months. 9 months, why do we say 9 months? Well, that's what they give us, 9 months. So basically, a lot of times it is not the teacher's fault that this is happening. It's our school system that says you have to teach this and that. And a lot of times the schools are teaching to test, teach them how to take the test so they will pass the test so these schools could be successful. And last week I spoke to you about some of the tests that our children are taking. It's not to test how much they know or whether they're on point. It's to test whether the teachers are on point. But in testing whether the teachers are on point, ours, because they're not making the grade. I don't know what happens to those teachers that are not on point, but I do know what happens to our students. So that's something that we have to be aware of and open our eyes and see exactly what's going on. We really have to. These are our babies. And, I was looking at a DVD or a documentary on Facebook last night, and it's called White Like Me. And this young boy, he was raised up in a black neighborhood. He went to a predominantly black school, predominantly black college. That was his culture. Even though he was white, the area that he was raised around was predominantly black. And when he went to school and started going to junior high school with some of the students that he grew up with or went to elementary school, he started to realize how those students were treated so much differently than he was. But he felt like, I'm not any different than that. But then he learned that his skin color made a big difference. It put him in places where his counterpart, his black friends or whatever you want to call them, was not able to go. It put him in places. And he had privileges just because of his skin color. They showed a lot of rioting and a lot of things that was going on, and they called him, when he would go speak, he became this a psychologist, whatever, and he would go speak at different places, people saying that he hate white people, and, you know, I guess whatever else they would call him, you know. So I thought it was very interesting on that end. I do remember watching a movie where a white man, he wanted to figure out what it was going to be like to be black for a few months. So he took medicine, he changed he painted his skin or whatever he did to his skin to darken it. But to me, he looked like a white man with a keen nose with dark skin. And he didn't even look like real dark skin. It didn't even look real. But there's a scene in that movie where the young man, there's another guy who says, you think that you now know what it means, it is to be black for a few months or whatever it was that he did. You think because you have suffered, because you were not able to eat where you wanted to eat or sit where you wanted to eat, that now you know what the plight of black people are? He said, I don't think so. And he let him know, just because you did that for a few months, you really don't know. We had to do this for a year. We can't change our skin color, but except for those that are changing their skin color now, the bleaching and the things that are going on, the lightening of the hair, and I'm like, oh, my God. So, you know, what I like to do sometimes is I like to look at these people who have lightened their skin and go back in their archives and pull up their old pictures, and I'm like, oh, yeah, she did have a nose job. Yeah, she was darker. And I know that as we get older, sometimes our skin will get darker, and if we're in the house a lot, sometimes our skin will get lighter. Me, on the other hand, when I was younger, I was really, really light. After I had my babies, I started getting darker. And now that I'm out in public and stuff, I'm even more darker. But when I was living in Phoenix, I was got real dark, and I loved it. So I moved back to California. Now that my son is in Phoenix, and I lighten up. But anyway, our children are suffering a lot just because of their skin color. And I just wanted to go there with you. So I'm hoping that the parents and the guardians, whoever is over these children, will get a chance to go in and talk to their teachers or their administrators, whoever you need to talk to about your child's educational career, whatever you want to call it. Anyway, last week I talked about the word inculcate. I'm learning to say that word a whole lot better. And I was looking online, and I pulled up the word inculcate. Also, I pulled up the some of the definitions. And inculcate, and we knew what they talked about. Let me see if I can pull it up again. Do I still have it here? Because I found some more information about the word inculcate. Okay, it didn't show up here. But I found some more. I found a little bit more about the word inculcate, and I want to share that with you. Inculcate is a way that the educational system is constantly bombarding. I'll put the word bombarding our children's minds with a concept of who they are, how they're supposed to be, how they're supposed to walk, talk, think, and it's on a regular basis. And when you do that to a child on a regular basis, their thought patterns change about who they are and what they're supposed to do. So the inculcation comes about when we want to make sure our children are socialized into the system the way the majority, now black people are the majority race, but the social majority, I'm not sure how you would say that, the white people, how they want us to learn and how they want us to behave, okay? And the inculcate and provides a conscious teaching program to put in values, norms, and social skills that will fit the individual for their role, adult role in society, okay? Now, I'm going to read some things to you today, and we're going to talk. And like I said, this is a live call-in show. You can call in. You can ask me some questions. I would love for you to ask me some questions. I would love for you to call in and talk to me so we can have this dialogue. I love to have dialogue with you guys. Okay? Look at this. There was a study that was revealed. It's revealed data that showed that more black boys are put into special education classes when they don't have a disability. Some of those students who do have disabilities, they're never diagnosed, and they stay in the regular classes and struggle. So I'm going to share some of the things that will cause our children to be put in a class where it's special ed. I know that when I was going to school, I'll share this with you. When I was going to school in New York, and I think I shared this last week, how we had our students, I lived in a project, Staten Island, Manners Harbor. Hey, Manners Harbor, if you're out there listening. And we had PS 44, and we had Junior High School 51. That's the school, junior high school I went to. And we had classes. Now, where I lived in the projects, we had It was predominantly black, Puerto Rican, and some white, but predominantly black, then Puerto Rican, and some white. So what's happening in this community is that when we went to public school, we were all together. I remember my classroom in public school and elementary school was predominantly black, like my class. A few white people in my class, I could look at the pictures and share that. I mean, that's just what I had, predominantly black. But when we got to the junior high school level, things changed. Those students that I went to school with, that I lived in the neighborhood, they were no longer in my class. They were in what they call a remedial class. And those classes were held down in the basement of the school. Now, when I said basement, it wasn't dark and dingy or anything like that. This is where they had classes. That's where they had a lot of their shop classes. But that's where the classes were held. And then I remember when I moved to Florida in my beginning of my high school years, there's a TV show that came out called Welcome Back, Cotter. And, you know, he had the sweat hogs. And those were the kids that were kind of like, you know, rowdy or, you know, just mischievous and wanted to know a lot of things. If you really look at those kids wasn't really bad. They just wanted to know some things. They just wanted to question what was going on. And, you know, they had their own way of learning. And that was the way it was with the children that I went to school with. But they were put in this class, and it was called a remedial class, meaning that they needed to go back and learn the basics. Now, I didn't see... When I was in elementary school, I didn't see these students as failures or anything. They just were students. I mean, like I said, they were like the kids in this movie show, Welcome Back, Carter. They wanted to know things. They wanted to get involved with stuff. So, once again, they were there. I'm not sure what happened because when I moved to Florida, I went to high school in Florida, and they went wherever they went. But most of those students, some of them became very successful. And some of them got into drugs. Some of them are no longer living, which is sad. But I believe that's what happens when our children are placed in places that they should not be, when our children are not given a chance, and they're told who they are and what they will never be. And at that time, our parents didn't know to stand up and say, my child is not that. My child is this. Especially if the parents felt like they could not control their child and whatever they were doing. Maybe Johnny didn't come home when the lights were coming on at night and mama had to smack him or whoop him, whatever you want to call it, because he's coming in 2 hours after the lights are out in the neighborhood. Or he's hanging around with the wrong group. So anyway, our children are being misdiagnosed. There are a group of our students who are in special education that do not have a disability. And they're numerous. If you go into a school right now and you go to one of the special ed classes, you'll be surprised at the students that are there. I'm going to tell you this. When I was working, I had the organization Women with Visions Unlimited, and one thing that I did, I taught a entrepreneur class. And I went into our county boot camp program for the young boys. And no doubt these boys have been to community schools. A lot of them have been in special ed. A lot of them have been labeled that they're this and they're that. But when I went in to teach this class, I was surprised at the knowledge. When I'm talking about adding numbers, putting percentages and all this stuff together, I'm talking about venture capitalists. I'm talking about bank interest loans and how to do the business, and they actually created each group created their own business. I was shocked at the talent that these young men have. But now that they're in the system, and if they don't get them that seal before they turn a certain age, you know, that's going to follow them along the way. And I just found out, I thought when they closed that facility down, they let the kids just go back out into the streets. But what they were telling me, what I heard, is that they didn't feel like that program wasn't helping the children. So what they did was they closed that down because they needed the beds, because our jailhouse was getting full, and they put these children back in juvenile hall. And this is what was said. because you know, they were coming back anyway. They were going to come back anyway because they couldn't stay out of the system. So we were going to just put them in the juvenile system. So that's where they are to serve out the rest of their time. Once you're in the juvenile system, you don't get the education. Yeah, they go to school, but they don't go to school like our students go to school out there. The education is so dumbed down. They don't get a chance to do all the extracurricular activities that our children do in school, you know. They don't get a chance. Their English classes are cut down one class. Math is cut down one, where you would normally need three, you only need two. Whether you need four, you need three. So that's how their education is really working toward them. And then the possibility to go into college or wherever they want to go, you know, unless they have that person, some parole officer or whoever wants to really work with that child, you know, we look at the possibility of them even going to college or getting a degree. Wow. So those kids are, those that are being put in special ed are really numerous. They have a disability, but they do not. And what we find out is that these children are bored by the environment that they're in. I mean, they're not being challenged. I look at my oldest one. He was bored, and he would sit in class and read a book while the teacher would be lecturing. And he was one that, I know this, can I just move on now? Don't bore me with the same stuff. I'm sorry that Sally Sue, Jamie, Marguerite, and all these others have to get this for the next 3 weeks. I got it. I want to move on. So he would find himself reading or looking around in class or getting up and walking over to the window and looking out the window. I mean, just things that interest him. And so we had to go before the site school board meeting. He had a teacher that was really a butthole. And she kept sending him to the office, sending these referrals and all this other stuff. And he had to go to the site review board, and we had to take him to the psychologist, which I refused. But then I know that if I keep refusing what they can do, they would be able to take the child away, saying that I'm an unfit mother, that I'm not giving my child the help that he needs, that they thought he needs. So we allowed him to go. Went there, they took the test, and they found out that my son was not ADHD, that he had a very high IQ, and he was bored as all get out. Fourth grader operating in a ninth grade level. Okay. So if I had not pushed it or been there with my child, they probably would have said, okay, he is special ed. You got to put him in another class. He has a learning disability. He sits in class and he just looks around. He looks unengaged. And then, you know, when he's doing his artwork and when he's doing work, he has to stand up. He can't sit down in his chair. Those little things. And a lot of these little things happen because these teachers don't have to take child development classes and they don't understand the developmental stages of children. Some children work better when they chew. Some children work better when they stand. They can't sit in a chair, but they're really engaged. And I have pictures of my son when he was engaged in artwork or whatever he was doing. He was leaning over the table, he was standing, and he was really engaged. But to have him sit down in the chair to do it, that's not going to happen. Some of the times our children are punished more, and we know that this is something that we've been reading, that they're punished more often than the white boys that are often having the same crime or just doing the same thing. But our children are given harsher punishments. And when the harsher punishments come, then they're suspended or they're not really that much. That soon they're not really expelled, but they're suspended from school 2 or 3 days. So when you're being expelled from school 2 or 3 days, you're missing 2 or 3 days of instruction, especially at the elementary level. And so when you come back, you don't miss 2 or 3 days of instruction, and now you have to play catch-up. Okay, you're playing catch-up on something that you probably needed, and now you have a gap in your educational system and your education. Another one of the things is that our behavior, sometimes they said our children have bad behavior. And when children do behave or are misbehaving, they can be mistaken for a learning disability or a mental disability, such as ADHD. They often are not given a diagnosis or not given a correct one because their regular behavior doesn't fit in with the environment that they're in. I'm going to stop right there. There's an environment and there's a behavior that they want these children to fit in. So if Solomon is not fitting in with that social norm that the teacher thinks that this is how these children should be inculcated into their school system, then they might have a mental disability or a learning disability. Now, mind you, there are students that have learning disabilities and they just can't get the work. And they're in they're in their regular classes, and the teacher is moving on, right along. But what happens is that the students, because they can't catch on, what happens is they do start acting up in class, and I've seen it. Their behavior, they start showing out because they got to get the light off of them. They got it when the teacher's asking them to. Can you read this? Can you read that? And they know they can't read, so they gotta do something crazy to get the whole class looking at me, not as that I'm reading, but I'm making everybody laugh. Aren't I funny? Aren't I hilarious? And I'm bad. I'm the baddest one in the classroom. And when I say bad, not bad, bad, but look, I'm cool. I'm the coolest one in the classroom because I could do whatever I want to do. I don't have to do what the teacher tells me to do. And that's just, to me, I've seen that happen. And that was a sign that the child did not know, not so necessarily that he had a learning disability, but he just did not know the work. But if they don't know the work and that behavior, now we got a disability, now we got a learning disability, or we have a mental disability. And I'm going to read this to you. It says, from infancy to adult, it is thus a vital means of social control. That's education in a broad sense. From infancy to adulthood, it's thus a vital means of social control. Formal education in modern societies communicates ideas, values, which play a part in regulating behavior. So, in other words, I'm gonna put this into you, I gotta put this value into you, so I can what? Regulate your behavior. The new generations are instructed to observe the social norms and the violation of which they may invite punishment. So if they don't do what they're supposed to do, there's punishment. And there's social integration. Education, by imparting values, also integrates people into the broader society. The curriculum of the school, its extracurricular activities, and the informal relationship among the students and the teachers communicate certain values and social skills, such as cooperation or team spirit, obedience, or fair play. So from the beginning, our education in a broad sense from infancy to adult is one that plays a part in regulating the behavior of the child. So you know that I just got finished reading. Misbehavior can be mistaken for a learning disability because our child's behavior doesn't fit in with the environment that they're in. Now, let's look at our racial bias, okay? Over 80% of teachers in America are white women who come from white neighborhoods. There are many out there that subject their students to racial biases and put black boys in special education classes because they feel that they are a threat or that they cannot teach them because of the stereotypes that they have heard. This is a great disservice to the young black men who want to learn and excel in their schooling. Once again, you got Solomon sitting in the class. He's bored as all get out. He may be in sixth grade. He may be in fifth grade, maybe even in the fourth. He's sitting back. He's slumped back in his chair. He got his arms folded in front of him. He got his head cocked to the side. And as the teacher's talking, he's just looking at the teacher. Picture that in your mind. Bored is all get out. not thinking anything, probably thinking, I can't wait till recess bell is out. I can't wait till school's out. So I can run home, shoot some baskets or watch TV or whatever I want to do. I want to play with my remote. I want to, whatever he's going to do when he gets home. But that child, because of the teacher and because of the biases that she has heard about young black boys, she gets threatened. She feels threatened that he's looking at her in a particular way that she's not used to anybody looking at her. And she sends him to the principal's office, and because he won't straighten up, because he won't interact in the classroom, because he won't do this, they may call his parents in and say, this is what he's not doing in class. He's not participating. He's not doing this. He's not doing that. He turns his homework in, but he's just there. And the parents, unless the parents grip on who their child is, they will agree with that teacher, and they will go home, and they will tell a young boy, you better sit up in class. You better learn. You better engage. You better do this. You better fit the norm of society. You better do this, because I don't have time to be coming to this school bothering with you and your mess, not really understanding what their child may be going through sitting in that classroom. And a lot of times the parents don't even listen. It's just like, no, your teacher told me this. Do you think she's going to lie? Well, parents, yeah. The teacher will lie on your child, definitely. She has to do something to save her, but because apparently she thinks he's not getting the work because of the way he's sitting, and she's feeling threatened. So because of the racial biases in our schools, our students be given a great disservice, even to those who want to learn. Maybe that's just their quietness. Maybe they just that's how they sit in class. But they're grabbing everything that they're doing, but they're quiet, they don't want to sit, and they don't want to talk. But they're getting the work. Now, there's another thing that happens. It's a separation. Like I tell you, my students that I grew up with, they were in the basement. And I tell you what, there were more Puerto Rican boys and Puerto Rican girls and black boys and black girls. But not too many girls, but there were more boys in those classes. Not too many girls, but more boys in those classes. And but the girls, we were put up in the regular classroom, and I remember in one of my schools, when I was in junior high, there was like only one, two, there was only two of us in my whole class that was predominantly white. And that was me and Donna Peterson. We were in the class together. There was many of us. But that's what they did. They separated. Now, what happens is black males, they do not thrive when they're separated in school situations, okay? You told me that I don't know what I'm doing. You told my mom that, you know, I'm not engaging. Then you send me to the school psychologist, and now you got me going to these doctors because you think there's something wrong with me. And now you put me in a separate classroom. You put me in the basement of the school in the remedial class. What do you think that's going to do to one of the students? Tell me, how is that going to affect that child? I think it's going to be very detrimental to him, unless he has a very strong background and unless, you know, his parents are there for him. But if he has to go this alone, it's going to be devastating to him. It can become very devastating. Some students can overcome it because they're going to find that one teacher along the line that's going to really help them. But unfortunately, most schools that diagnose a child as having a disability, incorrectly or not, feel that this is something that they cannot overcome and place them in special education throughout their school career. They never get to be with the quote-unquote normal students, and their education suffers because of it. Like I said, dumbed-out education. Let me share with you a little something, and I think I told you. I used to be a preschool teacher, and there was this one little boy, and it seemed like wherever I went, he went. He had cerebral palsy. He was very high-functioning. You know, he walked with a limp and stuff. He didn't have to have a cane or a walk or anything. But, you know, he was handsome African American boy. He was like, ooh, cute. So, you know, his mom, you know, after he left the preschool and went into the public school, they had where they were integrating special ed into with the regular classes, which is okay. But with him, all he was able to do was give him coloring pages, this sheet work and stuff to do. Nothing that they were teaching him educated. They weren't teaching him how to add, write, or cut, or even write his name or recognize his name. They wasn't teaching him any of that stuff. So when his mom found out that I was tutoring, she asked me to tutor him after school. Well, by the time he would come to me after school, he'd be so tired, he would just fall asleep. And to me, it wasn't fair for me to take his money, his mom's money, and then he falls asleep and I'm getting paid. So I talked to her, and I said, you know what, honey? I said, you know, he's so tired. I can't do nothing with him because he's too tired. And she didn't know what to do, so I told her, I said, but what you can do if you wanted to, you could pull him out of that situation, send him over to this homeschool charter school. I will be his homeschool teacher. I was just opening up a preschool in my home, and I said he could be in my classes, but my school ends at this day. And she said, that's okay, you could take him, if you don't mind taking him into this other little town where I would do tutoring at this daycare center, and I would just drop him off, and I'd go in and do my tutoring, and his mom and dad, whatever, would pick him up. When I started with him, he didn't know how to hold a pair of scissors. He didn't know how to cut a straight line. He did not know how to trace. He didn't recognize his name. He couldn't write his name. So after working with him with my preschool, I had to start right there with the preschool level with him. Mind you, he's in first grade now. By the time he finished with me, before they moved back to Texas, he was able to cut, hold a pair of scissors and cut. He was able to recognize his name, write his name, trace his name, and trace a straight line, crooked line, trace a circle, those basic things, and learning his numbers and alphabet. Yes. So he had, with me, he had a great start. Yes, it was the simple things that he should have learned in kindergarten or even in preschool, but it was something that they just didn't teach him. So I'm hoping that he's doing well now. I know he's probably just about a grown man now, so I hope he's doing well, because it takes that parent to say, you know, no, I know my child could do better. You're not going to keep my child in this class and just give him coloring pages and he's just going to scribble over the color pages that this is his work today. No, that's not his work today. And one thing, his father was really so protective of him and felt like, you know, they're pushing him, he can't do this. But his mom said, no, he could do more. And it showed him that when he was with me, he could do more. Parents is going to take you standing up for the rights of your child and say, my child can do this. I was watching something last night when I'm at work. I work at night and, you know, night shift, midnight shift. And so I get the chance to watch a lot of documentaries and stuff. And I was watching something. I can't remember what it was. But it had to do with our President Obama. And it was talking about his speech at the time that he was when he was voted to be president that night. And, you know, Michelle had the red dress with the black dress with the red in the middle, whatever she was wearing. And he was out there. And he was saying that something about an injustice to a people. He talked about a people. He didn't say the people. He said a people. And then he says, when they say that you can't, in the same sentence, he talked about a people and saying, yes, we can. And I took that, I mean, I heard that speech for so long and heard him say those words for so long, but it just dawned on me that when he says a people, he was talking about us. And when he was saying that you can't, you say, yes, we can, he was really talking about us. Now, a lot of people might not like what he's done over the past years, that he's there and can't wait for him to get out. But I want to share something with you, and I want you to think about this. And if you want to go back, you can look at some of his debates and stuff. He has always told us to get into our communities, start in your communities, build up your communities, build up your neighborhoods, work in your communities, be the change that you want to see. Okay? He never said what he was going to do. Never said, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. He always told us what we should be doing. Just a little side note. And I said that to say this, is that if we want to see change in our schools, if we want to see changes in our children's education, it's something that we can do. The laws have changed so much that we have a right to say what our children are going to learn, what books our children are going to read. We have to get on some of these city council, school board meetings. We got to go get on some of these site council meetings. If there's a PTA, if your child is still in school, you got to get onto the PTA. Even if your child is homeschooled, you need to be aware of what's going on in the educational field in your community. What laws are they instituting? Because there are other parents out there that are not homeschooling that have to work, that don't get a chance to go to those meetings, but you may have a chance to go to those meetings. And I would just go, when I was homeschooling, I'd just go sit in. And they start throwing all those alphabet, and I write the alphabet down, you know. And when they say the word, I'm like, okay, that's what that means. But I'm sitting and I'm listening what they're doing and what their plans are for the education process. And I would go talk to my friends about it, and they didn't have a clue. The kids were in school. They didn't have a clue what I was talking about. What is she talking about? I found out later. But now they know what I was talking about because I was telling them what was going to be coming up down the road. Now they know what was going to be coming down the road. And I didn't have a problem, but I felt like this is what I needed to do for my students. And even those, when I opened the private school, it gave me leverage. It gave me knowledge that a lot of people didn't have. Okay. One thing that we found out, and when our children are being put in special ed classes and they're not there, there's a group of them that have special ed, that have special needs, that need a special education, but their parents have fought for them. And they said, oh, no, you will not put my child in. My child will not be separated into a special ed class. My child is going to stay right where they are supposed to be. And you're going to teach my child, and we're going to walk my child all the way through their graduation date. And we're going to get through this. And we have seen where students are now in honor classes. They're taking their AP classes. They're taking those classes. They're succeeding in those classes. Why? Because their parents pushed that school that, no, this is what you're going to do. You're going to provide a tutor for my child. And schools have the money to do that. That's called Title I money. Or the parent would find a tutor for their child to help them along. So it takes us as parents, as black parents, concerned black parents, grandmas, aunties, uncles, who's ever over those children, to be involved in that child's education. So one thing we need to do, we need to get these black boys out of the special ed classes, putting them back in our regular classes if we need that, or homeschooling them, or starting your own successful Afrocentric school where your children could be in an Afrocentric school, okay, where you know that they're going to get what they need. You're going to know that they're going to graduate successfully, that you know that you're going to be able to tailor that education around what they need to learn. They're going to be successful because they're going to have teachers who look like them. Even in getting the teachers that look like them, it's not so much as looking like them, but it's having that gut of that feeling that these are my children, these are children of the diaspora. We need to work with them. We need to help them. We need to get them back on point, especially in our society today. We see what's happening with our students being pulled over, being shot, laying on the ground, being kicked by the police. It's nothing different than what happened back in the civil rights time. We're still in the civil rights, but in the 60s and 70s. During the marches. But now it's just outright blatant. It's just outright blatant. You know, you see it. There's nothing hidden. What's happening? Our black boys going back into slavery. You said slavery, yes. To the prison is a slavery. It's slavery. And why did I say that? I'm going to tell you why I say that. I'm going to tell you right now. If we ever had an opportunity. Now, sometimes you can go to government agents or you can go to a bookstore and find the Constitution of the United States, okay? Find the Constitution. And you'll read about the 13th Amendment. I'm going to pull that up right now, the 13th Amendment. And when I read it for myself, when I used to hear things about the 13th Amendment, I said, what are they talking about, slavery? So I had to read it myself. And I'm going to read it to you. And it's this way we want our young men. And this is what it says. The 13th Amendment to the United States of Constitution abolished slavery and involuntary servitude, except as punishment for a crime. In Congress, it was passed by the Senate on April 8, 1864, and by the House on January 31, 1865. The amendment was ratified by the required number of states on December 6, 1865. On December 18, 1865, Secretary of State William H. Seward proclaimed its adoption, and it was the first of three Reconstruction amendments adopted following the American Civil War. Slavery had been tactfully protected in the original Constitution through the clauses such as 3/5 compromise, by which 3/5 of the slave population was counted for the representation in the United States House of Representatives. Okay? But my point is, through the amendments formally abolished slavery throughout the United States, factors such as black codes, white supremacist violence, and the selective enforcement statutes continue to subject some black Americans to involuntary labor, particularly in the South. In contrast to the other Reconstruction amendments, the 13th Amendment was rarely cited in later case law, but has been used to strike down peonage and some race-based discrimination as badges and incidents of slavery. While the 14th and 15th Amendments apply only to state actors, the 13th applies also to the private citizens. The amendment also enables Congress to pass laws against sex trafficking and other modern forms of pass laws against sex trafficking, which is slavery, but when it comes time for us, the United States Constitution abolished slavery and involuntary servitude, meaning that if I don't want to work for you, I don't have to work for you. Okay? You cannot make me work for you. That's involuntary. I don't volunteer to do this, except as a punishment for a crime. Now, when young people go to prison for a crime, they are now involuntary slaves. They don't want to be there. They don't want to work for nothing. They don't want to work for 25 cents a day. But they are involuntary slaves. And now we have the industrial prison complex. We have all these things going on. We have these private prisons going on. And a lot of things are happening in these prisons that our people are working. They're working. They're working for nothing. So when you got a smart, say for instance, you got a smart young man who was put in prison for whatever mistake he did, they're not only just putting him in prison, but they're using that knowledge that he has. They're using that knowledge to teach others to work in the computer labs, wherever he's working, in the machine shop, whatever he's doing, that's what they're using him for. They're just not sitting there wasting away. Some of them who don't have the education, they may be. They're the ones who are working for them. Or they're just sitting out there in the weight room, building up their weights, and you know, maybe go to the law library if they can read. A lot of our kids are going to be in here. If we don't do something about our children in the educational system and the pipeline to prison, education pipeline to prison, there's not going to be many of our young men left around for us to do anything with. And we see right now, there's been a slew of young men, or they're older men. They went in there as teenagers, 18, 19, 20, and 30, 40 years later, 50 years later, they're coming out of prison. Now because of the DNA shows that they were imprisoned wrongly. Some of them, they're heavily compensated. Some of them are not compensated at all. There's one gentleman who was not going to be compensated because even though he went to prison wrongly, he had had a previous record. Don't matter. He spent a lot of his time, and now they're not willing to give him anything. You've had some of our men go in, realize that they should not have been in there, come out, and they got a month to live. Or those that were in there, they died in prison while waiting for their day to be released. We got to really think about what we're doing with our children, especially what we're doing with our black boys. When we see them on the corner, we see them hanging out, say, hey, what's happening? You know, talk to them. I know sometimes we're scared because we don't know how they're going to come off. They may pull out a gun and shoot us. We don't know. But we got to find some kind of way. It's going to take our men, our brothers, to stand up, stop thinking about yourself, do something. Do something in our communities with our young boys. We women, we will do things within the community. We women, we will go to conferences. We will learn everything that we need to learn how to work in our community. But we need our brothers, we need our men to step up to the plate to help out in these communities. I am so serious because I see it not happening. I do a youth conference. We do a youth conference every year. And when I first started, we first started this youth conference, I would be the mistress of ceremonies. And then we would videotape it, and I would look at the videotape, and about the second one we did, I said, oh, no, I'm not doing this no more. Because I looked like I had a bunch of, and we had a lot of young men coming to those conferences. And I looked like somebody, I looked like I could have been one of their mothers or grandmothers staying up there telling them what's right and what's wrong. I said, I won't do it again. I'll get another brother, another young person to come up there and MC and talk to them, somebody that could grab their attention instead of me, because I see them all the time. Okay? So I'm asking you, as a community, as a people, we could do whatever we want to do. And I know we could do it. We could see the change in our community that we want to see. We could rally around our young people and say, yes, we can. We could make a difference. And we need to make that difference for the other young ones that are coming up. Well, I want to thank you for listening to Dynasty Radio. I didn't mean to go that way, that far, that fast, or that deep. It's really real. When I see that, you know, when we have students that can thrive in an Afrocentric school, when they're with people who look like them, when they're with teachers who look like them, when the teachers are also thinking like they're supposed to be thinking, not just looking like them and have a European-centric mind, okay, we don't need that. But we need teachers who know about their African culture and will instill that and how important it is to instill that African culture into our children. That's what we need. So, family, this is Paula Matthew. I'm going to be signing off right now. Remember, you are your child's first teacher. When your child steps into that public school for the first day, it becomes a guessing game. That teacher needs you. If that's where you're going to place your children at in the public school, that teacher needs you to come on board and say, this is what my child needs, this is what I want my child to have, and this is what motivates my child. So your child won't end up in one of these special ed classes because that teacher does not understand your child. Okay? This is Paula Massey signing off, and you have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful week. I'll see you next Tuesday. Bye-bye.